Good evening. Thank you. Good evening and welcome to the Augusta Heritage Festival 1995, the Friday night concert. What a beautiful house we have. My name is Paul Kovac. I'm an Ohio musician and Buckeyes. I play with the Crittenden Hollow String Band. I've been here at Augusta for the last 2 weeks and I've just had the time of my life. You might have seen me playing in some of your music classes and in probably some jam sessions. I've been out just about every night. Anyhow, I've had the time of my life. In fact, I feel like Gary Cooper at the end of the Lou Gehrig story where he says, today I feel like the happiest man in the entire world. Anyhow, it's been a great 2 weeks. We have an absolutely extraordinary show tonight, and I'm thrilled to be the host of it. And we're going to start out with bringing out a fellow who is a champion in the ancient Swiss tradition of flag spinning, which is a new one on me. Let's bring him out here right now. His name is Bruce Bettler. Bruce is going to tell you just a little something about what he does just before he does it.
Yes, I would like to say to my class, Yolololulu! Thank you. Fun in schwingen or flag swinging is an ancient way of opening Swiss ceremonies, and it's a blessing of the people and of the land and of the thrower himself. It's only done by men because it's always done wearing, that's right, there's a reason though. It's always done by wearing the Swiss costume, and you can't swing with a long dress between your legs. It's just a practical thing. All my class were women and I did let them touch it though. So, fun and schwingen.
Bruce Bettler.
Thank you.
Bruce Bettler.
Let the games begin. Bruce.
We'll like to make one quick announcement. I'm not going to say this again, but all the artists tonight have their records and tapes, CDs, out in the Augustus store, which will be open during the intermission of the show. So do a little Christmas shopping, head out there on our intermission, and have a look to see what might be available. But everybody on the show tonight's got something for sale, so you might want to have a look at that. And in particular, our next artist has a brand new book that she wrote, and their book of stories of the mountains, in fact, is called Come Go Home With Me, a new book of stories. She's a performer, a traditional performer from Madison County in North Carolina, a county known for its purity in folk ballads, and traditional fiddle music. You know, the women of the mountain women of the North Carolina region were the keepers of those traditional ballads, and Sheila is no exception. She's in fact the most recent link in that tradition. She learned a great deal of her repertoire from her great aunt, Delly Norton, and from a lot of the women in her community as well. She also plays a great crisp drop thumb style of banjo picking, and a style that she learned was influenced by her uncle, Baird Ray and Dwight Diller. So let's bring her out right now, Sheila K. Adams.
Yeehaw. Well, I'm going to do this ballad for John Roberts. I hope he's out there, because John fussed on me on Sunday. He said that you should never just sing one verse of a ballad. So John, here's all 52 of them. Black is the color of my true love's hair. His face is like some rosy fair, with the prettiest face and the neatest hands. I love the ground whereon he stands. I love my love, and well he knows. I love the ground whereon he goes. If you know more, the winter's past and the leaves are green. The time is past that we have seen. And still I hope the day will come when you and I shall be as one. The Clyde for the morning weep, but satisfied I never could sleep. I'll write for you a few short lines, and I'd suffer death 10,000 times. So fare thee well, my own true love. Our time is past, but I wish you well. And still I hope the day will come when you and I shall be as one. I love my love, and well he knows. I love the ground where on he goes. If you know more on earth I see, I can't serve you as you have me. Well, as Paul said, the community that I grew up in was kind of, I guess, noted and recognized as being one of the last places that the traditional ballads were passed down through the generations. And they were actually done the way they were supposed to be done. They were sung whenever they were playing or working. And of course, that tradition has pretty much died out now. But thanks to people like Kaz Wallin and Granny, Deli Chandler Norton and Inez Chandler, Barzilla Wallin and Virgie Wallin, those ballads that their ancestors came over here singing in the 1800s, in the early 1800s, looks like they're going to make it right on into the 21st century. Now, I mentioned some names there. One of them was Inez Chandler. Now, remember I told you that Inez was one of those people that didn't have a filter between her brain and her mouth. So, evidently that was kind of a family trait because her mother told Inez some stories that, they were right entertaining to say the least, and this is one of them. Now, Inez's mother was named Tildy, and back when Tildy was a girl at the turn of the century, there was a peddler that went around from community to community. And you could buy just about anything you wanted off the back of that wagon. That was pulled by a mule. You could buy hammers and nails and flour, dry goods, shoes. You could even buy pieces of cloth. So Tildy saved up her money one year and bought herself a piece of cloth to make an Easter dress out of. Now, the dresses back then had bustles on them that stuck out over their hind ends, and if they could afford to buy one, they'd get one of those wire frames that would fit in that bustle and make it stand up pretty. Well, Tildy couldn't afford a frame, so when she got up on Easter morning, she did the best she could with that bustle. She stuffed an old flour sack in it and went rushing off down the road to church. Well, now when she got to church, she was awful proud of that dress, of course, and she wanted everybody to see it. So she grabbed the dress tail, held it up like this, and she sashayed down the aisle, and she stopped and she'd chat with this and over here a while. Then she'd grab the other side and she'd sashay down, and she'd stop and talk to this and over here for a while, till she very slowly kind of zigzagged her way down to the front row, and she sat down. Now, she noticed that when they stood up to sing the first hymn that there's a little bit of snickering that started right behind where she was standing, and by the time the service was over, it had spread all the way to the back of the church. Now, when the last amen was said, old Tildy hit that door and out into the churchyard she went, checked to see if her slip was hanging or if her buttons was all buttoned, and she couldn't find a thing wrong. So she sort of scratched her head and went on down the road toward the house. Well, she got about halfway home, and her brothers caught up with her. Now, Tildy was blessed with 8 brothers. And they, everyone just set into horse life and all bowled over there in the road a clutching their sides and a pointing at her. And now she was red-headed and had a temper to match. She wheeled around on them boys and she said, "I want to know what's so daggone funny," said folks has laughed at me all morning in church and I'm about tired of it. But you know how brothers are, they just laughed that much harder and went running on down the road to the house. Well, by the time she got to the house, she was livid. She was just a-shaking all over. Boy, she stormed through the door and down the hall toward her bedroom, got almost to her bedroom door, and she happened to remember that little stool that always stood there in the hall that had a mirror hanging on the wall above it. Well, she climbed up on that stool, and she positioned herself there in front of that mirror. Right there across the back of that bustle, you could read as plain as day, 50 pounds of the very best. Well, now, that was an example of one of the stories that I did not actually have a part in. And in order to get the good of this story, I've got to read it to you, so bear with me. I will explain just a bit before the story that I start reading here, that we used to go to a lot of what was called Round Robins. It's where the ballad singers would go and sit in this big, huge circle, and they would each one take a turn singing a ballad. Sometimes they'd go on, you know, up till 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, I was the only one that had a driver's license that they felt like they could order around. So Granny would call up and she'd say, "All right, now you get yourself up here. We're going to a round robin." So we'd strike out to whatever our destination might happen to be. And well, it was usually me and Granny and Burzill, her sister, up front in the car, and Inez and Kaz and Virgie in the back. See, Inez was of a considerable size, and Kaz and Virgie were small, so they got to sit in the back. As a matter of fact, Kaz said he had ridden on Inez's hip enough to where he ought to be one of her young'uns. Well, one evening we were en route to Warren Wilson College, and as we headed up the Marshall Mountain, Granny interrupted Kaz, who was singing right low into my ear. She also managed to bring a lull to the conversation between Virgie and Inez, who was talking fast and furious across Kaz's back. "Lord, that is awful about John Parrish's boy, weren't it?" Granny asked mournfully. For a moment there was silence in the car. "Who?" asked Kaz. Inez screamed into Kaz's ear, "John Parrish's boy, I believe," she said. Virgie said, "I don't believe Buck Parrish had a boy. Him and Lou only had girls. Let's see, there's Joan and Margie and Susan and Rosie that I recall, but I don't believe they had a single boy. Me and Margie is born within a month of each other, and I remember the time she cut her foot while we was wading in the creek. They had to take her off to the doctor in Marshall, and we all thought that was the biggest thing, because folks didn't go off to the doctor like they do nowadays. You know, I was telling Kaz just the other day that I'm amazed how folks run off to the doctor at the drop of a hat. Well, we just couldn't do that all the time. For every little thing that happened to us or every time we got sick, why, Lump fell one time and come near to busting his brains out, and he never went nowhere near a doctor. I'm afraid of him myself. They ain't no telling what them doctors will put you on, and the last time I went, I saw poor old Patty there, and you know she ain't no better now than she was." Burzill interrupts here and says, "You mean Patty's boy? What happened to him?" "No, not Patty and Weston's boy," Granny answers. "I'm talking about John Parrish's boy." Silence in the car. "Who?" asked Kaz again. Inez leans over and screams into Kaz's ear, "Jake Parrish's boy, I believe," she said. "No," says Virgie, "I really don't think Jake and Ev had no boys neither." "Now, wait a minute. Now that I think of it, they might have had one boy, Sim, I believe he is named. You know, they named him after Big Sim Gosling. Of course, I always thought that was funny because Sim weren't his real name. Seems like he'd his author or something like that. Now, that was who Sheila's Uncle Arthur is named for, or maybe they named him after Bob's great Uncle Arthur. Well, you know, I bet that was the way it was, because why would they have named Arthur after Sim Gosling? Because he ain't no close kin to Bob nor Emily neither. Lord, I remember when Arthur was born, it was in September of 1920. Inez interrupts, "Well, Arthur, Sheila, honey, nothing's happened to Arthur, has it?" Before I have a chance to answer, Granny says, "No, not to my knowledge. I'm talking about John Parrish's boy." "Who?" asked Kaz again. Inez answers even in a louder scream. She said something about Sim Gosling's boy, I believe. "Well," Virgie says, "now Sim and Gert did have several boys. They named one of them after Jimmy North. Now, he was, for a fact, Big Bob's brother. Of course, him and Sissy had a bunch of young'uns before he died of the typhoid. They lived right up there at the foot of the Sim Mountain, right down from where Deli's house is now. There was no log house you sit there before you started up the mountain itself. And I remember going there as a girl. Mom would stop and sit on the porch to see us, and they'd just talk. Molly used to come up there a lot, too. Lord, I always loved Molly. She had something wrong with her mouth and had trouble of talking. But seems to me like after she married Wade, it got easier to understand her. Now, Molly was Emily's sister, weren't she?" "Why, yeah, I know she was. That is the prettiest place her and Wade had down there on the Wade Cliff. They took good care of their place, and Molly always had the prettiest flowers. I used to go out of my way just to get to walk by the house so I could see the flowers. Burzill interrupts, well, John Parrish didn't have no girls, did he? Granny sighs and says, I ain't a-talking about his girls, I'm a-talking about his boy. Who, asked Cass? Now, Cletus did have a boy, Virgie said after a brief silence. His name is Joe, and I remember when he was born, it was in 1928, and as big as snow on the ground, used to come as big as snows back when we was growing up. Why, the weather's changed like you wouldn't believe in the last 10 years or so. I remember my mother talking about it snowing to where you couldn't get out to the barn to feed for days. Said the snow would just swirl around your head to where you couldn't see a foot in front of you. Now, they had it rough back then. Inez interrupts, Deli, what happened with Sim's boy? I don't know nothing about Sim's boy. I was talking about John Parrish's boy. Who, Cass asked with the first hint of irritation in his voice. John Parrish's boy, screams Inez. We pulled up in front of the building on Warren Wilson campus, and I jumped from the car to help my precious cargo disembark. Burzill sprang out and hurried through the door, followed by Virgie and Cass. Granny stood waiting with me as Inez struggled to free herself from the confines of the back seat of Mama's car. As Inez straightened her clothes and gathered her pocketbook, I got back in to move the car. I heard Inez ask Granny, well, what did happen to John Parrish's boy, Deli? And Granny very wearily answered, hell, he died. This is my last one. I want you to help me out with it. It's a real easy little banjo tune. Some of you might have heard it as My Home's Across the Blue Ridge Mountains. Now, in North Carolina, we sing it just a little bit different. And it's been really neat to be combined this week with Vocal Week, because you know a lot of old-time music is very vocal. It's been a really neat experience. I had the best classes. I swan in my banjo class and my ballad class especially. Talk about some ballad singers. Y'all did a great job. Now help me on this one. After I sing the first line, you know what it's going to be next. Just repeat. And then the last is always, I never expect to see you anymore. Okay? And on I'm going back to North Carolina, you have to say, I'm going back to North Carolina. You gotta put the ER on the end of it. That's according to Bobby McMillan, and he would know. From crying, how can I ever Thank y'all very much.
We have a quick, brief announcement that we'd like to make. The phones are down all over the campus today. Those, sounds like some people have already figured that out. And for those of you that might want to make a phone call tonight, you're going to have to go off campus, and I think even incoming calls tomorrow are not going to be, the phones are not going to be up until tomorrow. I believe we're getting our exchange changed, something like that. Doug Van Gundy is going to come out here and tell us about the Augusta Poets Gathering, which is happening tomorrow. Doug, would you come out here and Doug Van Gundy, please.
Thank you. And thanks for this opportunity to tell you a little bit about the second annual Augusta Poets Gathering. So since this will be the second time, we do get to say annual now. But it'll be happening down in the Elkin City Park as part of the festival activities tomorrow. And you'll be able to tell where it is because there'll be people without instruments talking into a microphone. And I think the tent will be labeled Poets Gathering. There's some wonderful, wonderful poets that are coming to join us tomorrow. All poets are West Virginia poets. Myself, Cleta Long, who some of you may be familiar with. She's from over in Tucker County, a wonderful poet. We also have the president of West Virginia Writers, which is a state writers group, and his name is Kirk Judd. He's an amazingly powerful performer. If any of you have ever seen, some of you may have seen him perform with the Bing Brothers, and that's quite amazing. The combination of string band music and poetry may seem like dissimilar elements to you, but they really, really work well, and I believe that Kirk will be performing with the Bings tomorrow night. And we'll also have Sherelle Weigel, who's from over in Parkersburg, West Virginia. All the poets, as I mentioned, are West Virginians. Will also be, the theme of the readings will be place and will be Appalachian voices, so I hope that you'll come down and check out the Poets Gathering. It starts at 11 o'clock in the Elkin City Park tomorrow. And for those of you who aren't sure what to expect, maybe, and maybe are unsure of how this might fit into the Augusta Festival, I'd like to do just a short poem for you as an introduction. And this is called A Beautiful Jar of Jelly. This is one of mine. I grew up with people who made music and made sense. Rogue uncles and button-shoed aunts who'd come to Sunday dinner in their proud brown coats, sewn on the treadle machine and fastened with mismatched buttons, rescued from other coats that could no longer be patched. Crow-eyed bachelor men who lived on the hillsides and smelled of frying potatoes and machine oil. Men who shaved on a Sunday and who always brought by a loaf of bread or a sack of tomatoes when they walked past the house on their way into town. Stern-faced Baptist ladies who'd tell us, "I know your mama," whenever we got caught where we shouldn't have been. Women who'd always ask after your granddaddy, who'd say things like, "He ain't got a lick of sense," or, "What a beautiful jar of jelly." Old fiddlers who had to toss their whiskers over their shoulders so they wouldn't get caught up in the bow. And the older still women who sung murder ballads while they swept off the back steps or cut out biscuits with a tin can. The finest times at our house were summer evenings on the front porch. I'd fall asleep in my granny's broad lap, listening to the bullfrog plunk of the banjo and the katydid fiddle sing. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Wow. Norman Blake has absolutely every qualification to be an old master, except he's not old enough. Not quite old enough. hopefully that means he'll be around for a long time to come as well. Nancy Blake is this incredible combination of being a great ear musician and having classical training. She's adept on about half a dozen instruments, and she's just about the perfect musical complement for Norman's music as well. And earlier this week in James Bryan's fiddle class, we were asking him how he got his tone. And he says, well, when he was a little kid, he went for a ride in the back of a car from North Georgia all the way down to Southern Alabama with a fiddle player in the back. His name was Monk Daniels. And we said, well, did he have really good tone? He says, well, no, he didn't have good tone, but he had passion and fire in his playing. And then we said, well, so where'd the tone come from? Well, he went up to Nashville and played with Kenny Baker for a little while and stayed with him. So the rest is James' genius, of course. So together, they're an incredible combination of heart and mind and humility. Norman Blake, Nancy Blake, and James Bryan.
We do appreciate all of those kind words that the gentleman had to say about us there. We don't know how much of it's true, but here we are. I'd like to start off with an old number for you that is a true song, happened around the early part of this century, right here in the great state of West Virginia. Called Billy Richardson's Last Ride.
Huntington on time. He pulled the fastest
this time freight's equal the U.S. mail. He's pulled that fast excursion to the music of the rail. He's lost in life on duty and his engine capsule free while pulling in Montgomery on westbound number 3. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. We're glad to be here. We've been here all week and trying to impart some of any kind of knowledge we could that the good people have asked us to do. We've had a wonderful guitar class over there of about 24 people, and they have really learned good. We had a good time with them. Appreciate them very much. We're going to do you one here that was recorded in 1936, I believe it was, 1 week after the re-election of Roosevelt. Strong Democrat number here. It's called "The Democratic Donkey Is Back in His Stall Again." Shouted on to Washington for the track, let us buy.